Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. And hello to you, the listener. I'm your host today, Jim Werbel, and Mary Rankin is my co-host. Welcome, Mary.
Hello, Jim. It's good to be back.
It's always good to see you, Mary. Guess what?
Oh, is this 20 questions, Jim?
No, it's Pledge Week! This is the kickoff to Pledge Week. And actually, what's exciting is, yes, you get to hear some of our best efforts in broadcasting and during this week. Like regular commercial media, we'll now intersperse it not with ads, but with gentle, or in some cases, not such gentle reminders that we not only need your ears to listen to us, but we need hard cash to make our station sustainable and cover our day-to-day operations.
Ah, yes. And I've also heard that during this time, you save some of your best programming for Pledge Drive Week.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm doing my very best to do that with Local Talk. So on today's show, we have two excellent segments, Mary. First, we have you back, which I always love to do. Mary is a sustainability coordinator for the City of Ames and works with different city departments to increase their efforts at sustainability. Today, she brings Christina Murphy from the Water Department to the show. Welcome to the show, Christina.
Good morning.
Good morning. Our second guest will be Candace Gardner, the research director at the North Central Regional Plant Introduction Station. Ah, that's a mouthful. But I had a marvelous visit there, and we'll learn about one of the not-so-commonly known treasures right here in the city of Ames. This segment deals with sustainability as well. So stay tuned to learn a lot more about sustainability. Mary, you're an expert on sustainability. I know you've got a master's degree in that topic. What does it take to make a community sustainable?
Well, it's interesting. When you think about sustainability, it's actually three components that all come together to make something truly sustainable, including a community. And so there's always the environmental pieces that we think about, the natural resources, the water, what we do with our waste, how we conserve our energy.
Trying to protect what's important to us.
Exactly. What sustains us on a day-to-day basis, right? And also social sustainability is very important. So how we're giving back to our community, how people are involved and engaged in making our community strong and resilient. And then the last piece is economic sustainability, having those finances to support those things that are near and dear to us and that also make us very strong and make us very committed to a sustainable future.
Does this apply to nonprofits too, like KHOI?
Absolutely. It applies to businesses, organizations, household, and absolutely nonprofits such as KHOI and all the other wonderful resources related to nonprofits that we have in our community.
Well, we have resources here. We definitely have a community of people right here in the room. One of the things that we're lacking is money.
It happens to so many. Don't worry, Jim.
And this is Pledge Drive Week. KHOI needs money to sustain ourselves. We are a not-for-profit radio station. We get no money from the state. We get no money from the city. We have operating expenses that exceed $100,000 a year. So there's a lot of things that happen here. We have programming. We have some paid staff, not very many. We have electrical expenses. We have rent to pay. There's numerous expenses, and none of this can happen on an ongoing basis unless there is money given to the station. So I'm asking people to call in. That's at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. You can call right now, and there should be somebody answering the phone. You can also check us out on our website at khoifm.org and pledge through the website. We ask people to pay $55 to become a member. It's very easy. People ask, why is it $55? Well, I talked to somebody, and all has to do with the gifts that we give for members. And it's all related to taxes and state regulation and things like that. So that's why we set it at $55, because it's just much easier accounting if we do that. You can become a premier member if you give $100. Or you can become one of 250 families if you give $250. Of course, if you want to pay our whole monthly expenses, it costs almost $8,000 to operate this station for 1 month. Now, if you really want to do that, that'd be marvelous. I don't expect anybody to do that. But these are the things that need to happen to make our station possible. So, little bit about the KHOI. Mary, what do you like about KHOI? What do you've been doing this for four? This is your fourth time with us. What do you get out of it?
Well, I think it's so great that our community is so rich in a diversity of resources that provide us with information and experiences and really make us very full-rounded in all of the different opportunities that we have to learn different things, meet new people, learn about all the great things happening in our community, and so many different and unique perspectives, right?
Right.
And so I think that all of the different communication pieces we have in our community. So we have public radio station, we have a city radio station, if we're talking radio stations, and then we have an independent radio station with KHOI. And I think each one of them fills such an interesting niche. And so I really believe in, and I'm so excited about the different stories that we've been able to work together that fill a really unique niche and offer a really unique perspective to our community.
So please, you can call 292-2878. Call us on the pledge. And you can pledge $55 to become a member, $100 to become a premier member, or $250 to become one of our 500 families. So you'll be hearing more about Pledge Drive in a little bit, but let's introduce our guest right now. I'm really pleased to have our guest in the studio. I think this will be an interesting show. So, Mary, go ahead. Introduce our guest.
Well, it is so exciting for me to be able to be sitting next to Christina Murphy this morning. So, Jim, if you weren't aware, Christina actually is with our Water and Pollution Control Department at the City of Ames. She serves as their assistant director in that department. And she's responsible for a plethora of things, of course. But we're really going to be talking specifically about work she does with the Smart Water Education Program, as well as carrying out a number of the department's extensive capital improvement plan projects, and which of course includes a new water treatment plant that's being built at this particular moment in time. One of the interesting things that I learned about Christina recently is that she really comes to her interest in water very uniquely and from a very, very young age, because she actually grew up between the Missouri and the Mississippi rivers. So she was surrounded by water. So of course it had to, you know, just absorb. And she I also love the fact that she's carrying that forward, you know, so you just don't it's kind of like, you know, I grew up on a farm. And so you can't take the girl off the farm, but not necessarily the farm out of the girl. Same thing with Christina. She and her husband have an acreage, and they are teaching their kids now all about sustainability through sustainable practices related to rainwater reuse, gardening, and also just conservation in general. So she's really living it, working it, breathing it. Yeah.
Trying to live the life here.
Absolutely. Love that. Anyway, so welcome, Christina.
Good morning. Thank you.
I guess one of the things that we were talking about, it's the holiday season, Mary, and Christina, and we do a lot of cooking, and with cooking comes a lot of something else that's probably not always managed properly.
That's correct. So this morning we're going to be talking about grease, fats, oils, and greases actually in general. So when you're cooking this holiday season, one of the byproducts of all that delicious cooking is fats, oils, and greases. And so you may be thinking that's the dirty side of things, but what we're going to talk about this morning is properly disposing of that fats, oils, and grease. We call it FOG. That's the acronym that we use.
Look at all this insider information our listeners are getting.
Yeah. If you hear us talking about FOG, that's what we're talking about.
Impress your friends at holiday parties.
That's right.
Yes, with these terms.
So if you dump your fog down the sewer, that actually causes issues.
Down the drain, you mean?
Down the drain. That's right. So
the other two as well.
I'll try
right?
not to get too technical on you guys. So
sinks or toilets, either way, it's going to be a problem.
So recently, over the past several years, we've realized that grease is a problem in our sewers. And so when you dump grease down the drain,
yes,
it coagulates, and then because it cools, and then we can have blockages in sewers, and that causes things that you don't like that's in the sewer, the sanitary sewer, to come back up. So what we're going to talk about is making sure you dispose of that properly. So don't send it down the drain, gather it in a can. I don't know about you, but my grandma used to use her old coffee cans and gather her grease in there. And so, compile your grease and then actually dispose of it in the trash. Now, I know that there are potentially other uses for it, so... But the big thing is keeping it out of the sanitary sewer so we don't have blockages.
How often do you get blockages?
So, we have – we get full blockages, which means basically no sewer can pass, about every two months, mm-hmm. 2 to 3 months. And so
– wow, that's amazing.
And what that means is basically no wastewater is going down. It's completely blocked, and so –
That's really,
point,
really
that
creates a big mess.
That's right. So it creates a huge mess. And so so what we want to do is keep that out. Now, we have a vacuum truck, that goes around doing regular maintenance every day. So we try and do what we can to stop those blockages from happening.
Before it comes total.
That's right. Otherwise, what happens, believe it or not, the largest grease log we've ever had is
grease
four.
Grease log? What is this grease
what?
Log?
A grease log. So
gosh.
So there is this terminology called a grease log, and that's basically a congealed mess. And so when we dislodge it in the sewer, if you can imagine, we've got this entire log of grease. Now,
where does it go after you dislodge it?
So,
has everyone started breakfast already?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. So unfortunately, it goes to our wastewater treatment plant, and the guys just hate it. It smears our screens, and it's an ugly mess. So again, this is another reason why we're trying to keep it out of the sewers. It's a maintenance nightmare for our staff. So what do you think is the largest grease log that we've ever had? Any guesses?
10 feet.
Oh, boy. I don't know. 6 feet.
6 feet. Yep. 4 to 6 feet, the guys tell me, is the biggest. Now, you're thinking a sewer is like generally 6 to 8 inch, sometimes
right,
even larger.
Uh-huh.
So that's a pretty hefty grease log that
oh,
we're
my
talking
gosh.
About.
Well, it's taller than me. My goodness.
So.
Ugh. Yuck.
I'm
yeah.
really sorry if you're having bacon and eggs this morning, but now you know what to do with
catch
your grease.
Catch that bacon grease,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So. Don't. Yeah, when you're cleaning it. I mean, every little bit matters, but generally try to get as much as you can into something else. Isn't some of the major problems more from places like restaurants and? I heard there was a new city ordinance. Or
there
something?
Is a new city ordinance. It's called our Fats, Oils, and Grease Ordinance, because we're clever like that. But yes, it mostly impacts our restaurants, our food service establishments, and they'll be asked to comply with the ordinance in which they'll be maintaining their grease interceptors or doing things like scraping their plates and capturing their grease and doing what we can to make sure we keep the grease out of the system at the point that it's actually occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually in effect. We're in a introductory period right now where everybody's getting used to it.
This is really a brand new ordinance.
This is very new. And so, the restaurants aren't getting charged yet, but mm-hmm. they will be. And so, again, we're trying to be responsible to our community and try and, one, take care of the problem at its source. And, mm-hmm. Everybody can do their part. And, two, make sure that any of the costs associated with, maintaining the sewers as a result of the grease problem is billed back to those that are greatly affecting it. So that's our grease ordinance.
Okay.
That's so interesting. And I think – so obviously businesses have a large quantity of
they
this,
do.
This fog that they have to deal with. But at the local individual level, so I mean, just some tips that I think would be interesting to let people know about. This is something that my grandmother did and my mother did is we certainly had the – the little coffee can full of grease, which we then actually used back into different recipes. And when we would put something in the crock pot, we would actually save that broth. And it's really interesting because if you think about it, when weather's getting colder, we're thinking about making soups and stews That's right. and all those sorts of things, what does it call for? It calls for stock, you know, or it calls for broth. Mm-hmm. And so we go to the grocery store and we buy these items that we're actually, you know, we're producing that we could be putting in the freezer and using later. And so there's, you know, from a sustainability perspective, we've definitely got the environmental piece here. Mm-hmm. We've got the social piece because we would rather that all of those resources and labor and money that you guys are spending going out and cleaning out these logs, we would rather that go into maybe other community services, right?
That's correct.
And certainly from a social piece, gosh, we're going to be using these things anyway, and why don't we just use the real goodness that we've produced already rather than going out and buying something else? So, gosh, we've got all the facets of sustainability right in a grease log, Jim.
Another thing you can do, and it doesn't take a lot, but you'd be surprised. Many of us have pets, and actually our pets need a little animal fat.
That's great for their coats.
That's what's great for their coats. It's what they'd be getting if they were out in the wild by getting things in other ways other than out of a bowl.
Right.
And so it's important for them to get some fat too. So just giving them
a
teaspoon of fat or depending on your animal size, maybe a little bit more a day is actually good for them.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, it's coming up on wintertime when most definitely people think of feeding birds. What are all those suet logs made from and the suet blocks made from? We can make our own at home. Those things run quite a pretty price as well. So, you know, there's all sorts of very unique things. We can probably Google what to do with leftover grease, fats, and oils, right? And come up with a number of ideas. But I guess my point is, gosh, we're spending a lot of money on these things when we're actually producing the raw material right in our own home.
You know, and the other thing is that this is not a city water problem, it can also block up your own drainage system. And then you have to call Roto-Rooter to deal with the mess, and it actually comes out of your own pocketbook.
Right. Talk about economic sustainability right there.
That's right. So, I mean, what we don't want to happen, you're going to enjoy your family over Thanksgiving and Christmas, is that you're blocking your own sewer and you're calling Roto-Rooter in after hours or on the holiday that they've blocked their sewer. Now, you're going to be paying an after-hours charge and a weekend charge. And
Roto-Rooter doesn't take out the fog. They just pass it down to the
next place. So
most of the times,
what we do to clean, you know, we have a vac truck in the city, so we can go to the manhole down and try and retrieve some of that grease. But Roto-Rooter is just going to jet it, and it's going to come to the city, and then obviously we're going to need to remove it or take care of things. So, and you know, we've been talking a lot about meat being the source of grease, but you should realize that butter, dairy products, all of them have fats and oils in them. You know, anything with oil in it, salads, dressings, gravy, you know, those things. Be aware that just because it's not just meat that's got fats, oils, and greases in it. So be thinking about that as you consciously put something down the sewer.
Right. I mean, so many pasta dishes we're putting olive oils on and, you know, all of those sorts of things, which are very, very healthy for us. But again, as we think of what we have left over from that, just being very, very cognizant about that.
Well, let's get out of the fog a little bit and talk about there's this building going up on 13th Street, and lots of people, I've driven past it. It's near Zylstra, you know, the motorcycle place. And and what the heck is going on off there, Christina?
That's right. So the construction on 13th Street is our new water treatment plant, well underway. Now, I know most people see the big crane out there.
Yes.
So this plant is a new 15 million gallon per day plant. Our current plant is rated probably around 11 to 12, but it's old, and so people get a little concerned about putting too much water through old pipes. Luckily, we only run about 6 to 7 million gallons per day. So the new plant is scheduled to be done in the spring of 2017, late spring, and we're on track right now. Things are going well. Starting to see concrete coming out of the ground if you're driving by, so lots of concrete has been put in. I think they said 1,000,000 pounds of rebar, and that's been exceeded since that was probably a couple months ago.
So. That doesn't have much to do with water. Then it takes a little water to make cement.
Yes, so lots of concrete going in. But one of the amazing sustainable things about the new plant is that it will be a LEED certified plant. At first, we thought we'd be the first in the state, but someone snuck through us. I know. But that's okay. It's the right thing to do. We're doing a lot
fabulous.
Of things. And so actually, for our community, we'll be getting about little over $6 million in loan forgiveness from the state for making it LEED certified. So not only are we doing something great for our community, we're hitting everybody's pocketbooks too and saving them a few.
Can you tell us some of the things that are happening to make it a LEED certified building?
So, obviously what goes into LEED certified, we're going to do extensive stormwater management, something that's pretty sustainable. So a lot of native grasses being planted there. We look at our lighting and our heating and cooling systems to make sure they're efficient. We're going to try and put in low VOC paint where we can. Obviously, part of this is a plant.
Yeah.
So we'll want to be careful about coatings there. But where we can, put in low VOC type paint. So that'll be good for the environment. It's good for us as employees.
Absolutely.
To be right. In that area. And low flow fixtures, just a whole host of things. So there's, if you go through the LEED system, there's a point for every different type mm-hmm. of initiative that you're making. So right now, I believe we're at like 20 points, and we only need 30 to meet the minimum line. So it's going to be, I think we're going to do great.
That's fantastic. And don't you have some outdoor programming area you're talking about as well?
Yeah, we took a site that probably was a bit of an eyesore for the community, mm-hmm. and we were able to work out a land swap with the USDA, and so it's just going to be, number one, just in general, a better place. But there's a ton of native area, and we've actually set aside a huge area of trees that are not being touched as part of this project. So we're making sure there are great stands in there, and we're hoping one day that we can do some outdoor classroom type setting.
I just think that's fantastic. That'll
be
wonderful.
Some education. There's some great trails back in there mm-hmm. that we're already enjoying, getting – you can go back behind the construction almost, and it's just a great piece of land, so –
And when is this going to be completed again?
So substantial completion is expected to do late May of 2017. So not next year.
It's over a year and a half away.
That's right. We got a ways to go.
Right. But I'm sure you'll have an open house and so folks can come out and see the area. That'll be wonderful.
We're going to be great. It'll be great to show it off.
I think it's so exciting, the LEED component. Working at Iowa State, I don't work directly on a lot of LEED projects, but I work sort of indirectly with folks that do. And just even for an office building, not doing all of the major plant components that you're having to be concerned about at your facility, it's challenging. And so to take it to the level of a water treatment plant is really very impressive. So very, very exciting. And our community should be very excited about this effort that the city is making. It's great.
Yes. Yep, we're following in Cyride's footsteps. They started that off for the city, and so it's
right.
just something the city is very much committed to.
And, of course, the intermodal facility also.
Oh,
so we have a number of wonderful facilities that have done that.
We've been talking to Christina Murphy, who is the assistant director
That's correct.
For the Water and Sewage Department.
Water and Pollution Control.
Water Pollution Control.
Right. It's a mouthful.
Thank you for coming. And do you have any final comments you'd like to share with us?
Enjoy your holidays, but save that grease out of the sewer and be sustainable.
Okay. Thank you very much, Christina.
Thanks, Christina.
All right.
It's Pledge Drive Week. It's Pledge Drive Week. And so I'm going to tell you a little thing, some things about KHOI Radio. Many of you probably are not aware, but our mission is building community through communication. So one of the things that we're talking about is community of people, and that is one of the legs of the triple bottom line that Mary was talking about that's so important to sustainability.
That's exactly right. And as I'm looking even at KHOI's vision, it's really in the context of sustainability. It's very sustainability focused because it actually has its own triple bottom line mantra. So first of all, KHOI is offering the best in arts, news, entertainment, and music. They're also featuring national figures and local voices for the enrichment of the community. And also, of course, welcoming all voices of our community here in Ames, regardless of perspectives, to freely discuss these issues, fostering local pride and respect. That's sustainability, Jim.
We're really trying to do some interesting program to bring more and more diversity into the community. Obviously, the city departments often come in and talk about numerous issues, but I have a show plan that deals with missionary work to bring in the faith-based element of the community, which often doesn't get heard. We have a lot dealing with the arts, which often does not get heard.
That's right. And you've talked about food. I mean, wonderful food conversations and just a real rich diversity, really encompassing environmental, social, economic.
We do a lot to support the agricultural community mm-hmm. and a lot at this station to support, because ag is very much a part of the Ames community. We'll be having a little segment that deals with that in just in about 10 minutes.
I'm really excited.
So we need you to become a member. You'll have a whole week to do it, but let's get started today. So I would like to hear the phone ring and have someone make a pledge to us. It costs $55 to become a member of KHOI Radio. It's not all that much. It's about 15 cents a day. Which is, or if you might want to think about it, about a little bit more, $1.05 a week to listen to the types of things that you listen to. If you think about your life and what you get to, I subscribe to the Ames Tribune, and this is it costs me a lot more than $55 a month to $55 a year to get the Ames Tribune, and this is another source of information to get information to help us build community.
Right. Well, and you know, the weekly cost that you mentioned is about a third of a latte, right?
Yeah.
So one latte.
One latte, yeah.
Just saying, as we all drive to work and we stop at our favorite locations and
maybe get
those.
Less than a latte, yeah. And how long? And you could get a latte and listen to the local talk as well.
Absolutely.
So please consider joining. That we have that level of category, the $55. There's the premier membership at $100. Or for people who really listen to us a lot and feel like they need to support us, you can become one of the 500 families and contribute $250. We'll take any amount over $55. It's appreciated. What we are trying to do is build community through communication, and it's a very important activity that we need to do on a regular basis. So please call 292-2878. That's 292-2878, and I want to hear that phone ring. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Radio 89.1 FM, serving Ames and Story City. And it's Pledge Drive Week, folks. It's time for you to start thinking about how much you're going to contribute to KHOI Radio to make it sustainable. There'll be more of that coming up. I would like to introduce our next guest, Candace Gardner from the North Central Regional Plant Introduction Station. That's a mouthful. I think she'll explain to us all what all that is. In my opinion, we have a globally valued resource right here in Ames, and Candace will explain a lot of that to you. Thank you for coming to the show, Candace.
Thank you, Jim.
And you have a guest with you.
Yes, we have our ornamental woody herbaceous curator, a horticulturist, Jeff Karstens.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff. Pleased to have you. We'll hear more from Jeff in just a little bit, but his expert is ash trees.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, explain to me, Candace, what this National Central Regional Plant Introduction Station is all about.
All right. Well, we're part of the National Plant Germplasm System, and there are about 20 sites around the U.S. that specialize in the collection and maintenance of plant genetic resources. And here in Ames, this station is about 67 years old now. It has evolved considerably over time. We have collections of maize, vegetables, oil seeds, ornamentals, medicinals, and what we really focus on is crops and their wild relatives. And the reason we do this is because plant genetic resources are the foundation of all sorts of development and research efforts to provide solutions for agricultural problems, for new traits, and new uses.
You're a part of the, well, we've all heard about the Svalbard doomsday thing. So you're related to that?
We predate Svalbard by about, 150 years. Anyway, the U.S. collections actually started in about 1898. And our collections are backed up at Fort Collins, the National Center for Genetic Resource Preservation. And we also back them up at Svalbard, as do many other nations.
So you're involved with saving diversity of seed stock.
Mostly seeds, some clonal crops as well. In Ames, we specialize in crops that heterozygous and heterogeneous and outcrossing. Other sites specialize in different things. And what we do is try to develop collections to represent the breadth of genetic diversity, of geographic origins of these crops. And then we maintain them and we provide them to researchers and educators to use in their studies and their applications.
So a lot of it is used for research purposes.
Yes.
It's one of your primary goals.
Yeah. We curate about 53,000 different accessions or varieties of plants. And each year we distribute somewhere between 40 and 45,000 packages of seeds globally.
Globally? So just not in the United States?
Oh, no. On an average year, about 60% of those stay in the U.S. and about 40% go international. And we really saw international distributions take off after the advent of the World Wide Web, because then people had access to the public database and could find our resources.
Can anyone order seeds? Can I call in and get seeds?
Well, they're really for researchers and educators and not for home gardeners. Curators invest an enormous amount of effort in maintaining these and maintaining their genetic profile.
So there's all sorts of things going on that you're contributing to making food more widely available to people all over the world.
That's our mission, yes.
Wow. I mean, this is the foundation of a sustainable future, Jim.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. This is wonderful.
And it's all about maintaining diversity.
Absolutely.
Why is diversity so important in seed stock? Jeff, why is diversity so important in seed stock?
Well, genetics only lasts for so long. You know, insects, diseases, they're always changing. Our climates are changing. You know, something that's good and working well today may not necessarily work the next time around. So it's important to have those genetic resources in the future.
So that we can have whatever we use value plants for, we can continue to get those things from plants that we value.
And we can always improve them too. You look at the yields of crops that we have today. They're continually growing, increasing in yield, and it's important to have access to those resources so we can continue to do that.
Well, Jeff is an ash tree expert, and we're going to hear more about ash trees in just a minute, but it's time to hear a little bit about the pledge drive. because it's Pledge Drive Week. We've got some diversity here, don't we, Mary? What about diversity and why is – how do you think KHOI fits into diversity within the communication network?
Oh, my goodness. We have so many wonderful educational resources, experiences here in our community through – oh, gosh, through events, through different publications, and certainly through communication sources such as radio. And in our community alone, I mean, gosh, if you look at it, we've got a public radio station, we've got a community radio station, and then we, have our independent radio station here with KHOI. And I think that rich diversity, hearing from so many different perspectives and different types of voices and different subjects, wow, what a wonderful resource and gift we have right here in our community.
Yeah, in some ways, KHOI radio can be accurately described in just two words, variety and local. I mean, what we've been talking about today is, well, the research station is obviously global and has that aspect, but it's right here in Ames.
It's right here in Ames. And, you know, every time I come on the show, I learn about these wonderful little jewels. I've lived here a long time, Jim, and I have a feeling that there are others that had no idea of the rich diversity, wonderful things that we're doing right here in our community. And that's why I think shows like this, this perspective through radio, is such an important part of what we offer in our community.
One of the things I'd like to point out, which kind of ties into the diversity not only of the seas, but the diversity of the partnerships that make the Plant Introduction Station work, is the partnership between Iowa State University, the Ag Experiment Stations of the North Central Region, which support us, and USDA ARS. Mm-hmm. And we employ a lot of ISU students. They are our workforce in addition to our full-time staff. And this diversity brings unique opportunities to us.
And to the people that work there, too,
yes.
Who are students and will wind up going elsewhere.
You could work there 200 years and learn something new every day, at least.
I would think so.
That's wonderful. That's just great.
Well, unlike most commercial radio stations, which feature usually one genre of music or one type of conversation or political news or whatever, KHOI presents a wide assortment of programs. Many of them are produced right here in central Iowa. So you can tune in at any time of day or night. You'll hear good music, intelligent talk. If you like music, you'll hear everything from classical to rap. If you are informed to content, you'll hear politics, economics, philosophy, poetry, local authors, community events, issues. So KHOI is on the air 24/7. If you don't like what you hear, try again in a few minutes. It'll be different because we offer a lot of variety, and that's what our effort at contributing to sustainability.
That's definitely, and Candace brought up a really good point that diversity and sustainability is not accomplished through, you know, an individual effort here and there. It's really a village effort.
Yeah.
And that's certainly a part of how I look at the whole diversity in our community. It's a village effort with a number of different sources, a number of different perspectives.
So call. The number, again, for the 10th time today is 292-2878. Do I need to repeat that? 292-2878. Get out a pencil, write it down on a sheet of paper. It costs $55 to be a member. You can become a premier member for $100. There are gifts associated with each level of membership and I won't get into those, but there are token gifts that you can come and get down to the station and pick up when you get here.
I imagine if people are downtown shopping today,
yeah,
they can just stop in, right, and do it in person.
You can come in and say hello.
See where the magic happens,
see
right?
See where the magic happens. It's a gorgeous station. It really is. So, again, please call 292-2878. And make your contribution. A $55 contribution is equivalent to $1.05 a week. Not all that much money when you think about all the different sources of information. You may not listen to us all. I listen to diverse sources to get my mm-hmm. information, but I do also listen to KHOI radio, and I want to keep it here in Ames. Well, we have an expert here. We have something happening in the United States, and it's called what, Jeff?
Emerald ash borer.
I think we've all heard of the emerald ash borer. And What's that going to do to the ash trees in Iowa?
Well, it's basically going to kill them, and it won't take very long. Right now, you look at the state of Iowa, we have 29 counties in the state that have confirmed the emerald ash borer. And technically, there's probably a lot more counties that have it. It's just we haven't noted it yet. The insect's really good at hiding behind that bark. It's very hard to find. It's inconspicuous. And until the tree really starts to die is when you start to notice it. And the insect can actually be in there for a couple years before you actually start to see damage on those trees.
So, and they're you're pretty certain, is this like the what happened with the elm trees? They're pretty much just going to disappear.
Yes, it's kind of very similar to Dutch elm disease in a way, in the fact that we've brought a non-native insect into our country by accident. We suppose it's probably occurred in the 1990s in that era, but it was actually confirmed in 2002 in the Detroit, Michigan area. Since then, it's moved throughout the United States. It's, I believe, reported in 24 states across the U.S. now, and it's attacking all of our native ash trees. And because that insect is a non-native insect, our trees haven't evolved with that insect, and so they're very susceptible. And so far, there has been no reports of resistant native North American ash trees.
Ah.
So what we're doing at the North Central Regional Plant Introduction Station is actually saving seeds. I've been very busy traveling across the U.S. trying to acquire seeds from native specimens and putting them into our storage facility. Unlike elms, Dutch elms disease wiped out so many elms, we really didn't have the opportunity to collect seeds, or did we know that we could collect seeds and store them. At least with ash, we do know that seeds can store for sure up to about 40 years. As long as the data that we have to support. But it's likely much longer than that. And the nice thing about ash trees is they have a lot. They produce a lot of seeds, and they're very persistent. They actually hold on the trees for a lengthy period of time for us to actually harvest them and put them into storage for future use.
How many different types of ash trees or varieties of ash tree are you trying to collect seeds from?
Technically, in the Midwest, there's about four or five species that are very common to the Midwest, and that includes green ash, blue ash, black ash, and white ash. Now, there are about a total of 20 total species in North America, with about 40 or 50, depending on which taxonomist you want to agree with. There's about 40 or 50 across the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for us locally, it's mostly going to be green ash and white ash that are going to be attacking us the most as far as that goes.
So you're collecting seeds from all over North America in regards to these different ash trees?
That is correct. So far, we have a couple thousand samples in storage, where each sample may have anywhere from 500 to 1,000 seeds.
You collect the seeds, and then what do you do with the seeds after you collect them?
Well, we haven't gotten that far yet. Mm-hmm. We're working with an insect that we currently have no really good controls as far as to figuring out how to deal with that. I'm hoping that down the road science will catch up with us and we'll be able to reintroduce ash and potentially some resistant lines with all the genetic resources that we have available at our research unit.
So you're going to be trying to contribute to hopefully maybe do some interesting genetic breeding and probably maybe increase the chances of success about resistance to that.
Well, here at the station, we're mostly focused with providing those genetic resources. I mean, that's a job right there in itself. We are hoping that to provide those genetic resources to anyone else that is willing to take it to the next step. So we kind of provide those baseline resources. That's the one step. That's a job in itself right there, keeping all those resources alive. It's a whole nother job of having someone actually do the genetic breeding and so forth to come out with those resistant lines.
I'm going to interrupt you, though. You're pretty modest here. you partner with a lot of people and help them select the resources that fulfill their objectives.
Correct. I mean, the Forest Service, the U.S. Forest Service, is very involved in obtaining seeds from us. They're actively collecting a lot of seeds themselves, and they're trying to build up a program to try to find resistance genes so that they can implement those for conservation purposes and restoration purposes and throughout our United States.
To give you an example, I visited the station earlier this week, and I talked extensively to Candace, and she's a corn expert. And you told me a little bit about the early corn that they're trying to crossbreed to.
Go ahead,
explain that.
We have the wild ancestor of maize in our collection, Teosinte. A lot of the collections include crop wild relatives. And it's much more difficult to move a trait from a crop wild relative into modern varieties if, you know, a century of breeding has been going on in between, a century of improvement. It's easier if it's a more recently domesticated crop and it's not that distant from its wild relatives. But there's a lot of research on Teosinte, its evolutionary biology, its traits. One of the things that all of our crop curators do is characterize these collections, and they use that information. They store the information in the database, and when a requester is looking for a variety, they don't want 20,000 accessions of maize. You know, they want something they can manage. And so the curators spend a lot of time studying the data to help them select those accessions that fit their purpose.
Interesting. So you do more than just say that, but you actually help the researchers who are trying to achieve something.
It's scholarly work, yes.
Yeah, around the world.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
It is.
Yes.
It is.
We get a lot of interesting requests besides just basic research. Sometimes it's repatriation. A country has lost its national genetic resources. They want to replace them. Sometimes it's an archaeologist that wants to compare modern specimens with something they found in a dig. Almost anything comes up.
Interesting. Well, I got to ask Jeff a question. Okay, so the seeds last about 40 years. Let's say the emerald ash borer is still around 40 years from now. You're going to have to regrow the ash tree to get new seeds. And it takes a while to get seeds from an ash tree. Have you thought ahead and figured out what you're going to do in that case?
Not really. you know, the game plan would be that, you know, if is to start a nice what we call a seed orchard, mm-hmm. where you would plant out numerous trees of particular lines. Try to select out elite lines that are performing well, and then try to combine those together to make more seeds. The nice thing about ash is, like I said, they are prolific seed producers, and they do persist for a while. So I would say on average it might take anywhere from 8 to 10 years from starting the seed to actually when it will actually produce seeds on a reproductive specimen.
You could protect them with chemicals in the meantime, couldn't you?
Correct. Yes, we can. There are insecticide applications that you can use that are very effective in keeping the tree alive.
Trees currently, like in my backyard.
Correct.
Kind of thing. Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And so the insecticide would be a way, in the worst case scenario, to keep replenishing the stock.
Correct.
By the way, if you've ever been driving around in South Ames and you see these burlap bags over in the middle of a field, what's going on with those burlap bags or whatever they are, Candace?
Those cage screens.
Screens.
They're screens over cages which vary in size, 10 by 20, 10 by 7 by Jeff, I don't know. You get the idea. But the plants in those cages require insect pollinators to produce seed. And so our curators work together with our entomologists, and the entomologist's job is to provide pollinator insects when they're needed. And he's got honeybees, bumblebees, alfalfa leaf cutters, osmia bees, two species of flies that basically are provided on demand when they're needed when the plants are flowering. And the screens keep the insects in. They keep other insects out. And it helps us produce seed that's genetically true to type.
So while we've got botanical diversity, we've got entomology diversity. Look at all the diversity, my goodness, that we are supporting. Yeah. It's amazing. I have a general question.
Go ahead.
So folks are listening to this program, amazed by the work you do, including myself, and I just want to say thank you. I had no idea, as long as I've been in this community, no idea. So it's always wonderful to hear about the richness. So if folks are out there, and they're so excited about the work you guys are doing. But, of course, we're individually very concerned about the diversity of food sources, of our trees, of our insects, all those sorts of things toward an ecologically sustainable future. Is there anything the individual can do if the individual wanted to say, gosh, these guys are doing such amazing work, what can I personally do in my own life? I mean, is there anything like that? Certainly, I'm sure being aware of, if you see one of the Emerald Ash Borers reporting it, so being very vigilant that way. But are there other things?
Well, being aware and paying attention is a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yogi Berra used to say it's a lot easier to observe when you're looking.
Yeah, it's great. Very important. And we look all the time, but do we really pay attention? Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point.
Well, and I think making intelligent decisions in each of our own lives is very important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure what you're asking me here, though.
Yeah, well, so I don't know if we're I am imagining if we're picking species for our backyards or something like that. Choosing a diversity of species, that sort of thing.
Right.
Yes, that is very important. If you look at what's happened over the history here, not just here, pretty much anywhere across the U.S. is, the Dutch elm disease came through and wiped out our elms. What did we do? We went through and we planted a bunch of ash trees.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
those
mm-hmm.
ash trees are very tolerant to our urban conditions, and they performed well, and it was a good selection. Unfortunately, we planted way too many of them. If we took a little survey around this room here, there's a 1 in 3 chances that you have an ash tree in your yard.
Multiple ones, yes.
And so what's happening now is we're replanting a new species. I shouldn't say new species. The problem is we're planting too many maples.
Uh-huh.
If you look down the streets nowadays, we've way overplanted on the maples.
Okay.
And so when you mention what's something that we can do here as a community is back to the diversity.
Right.
Don't plant the same thing your neighbor has. Plant something
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm.
There are many, many species of trees to choose from. And, if your neighbor has a certain species, you can enjoy their tree and you can plant something else.
Exactly. Great.
Well, I'd like to thank Candace and Jeff for coming. This has been very informative, not only to myself, but I think our listener has found out a lot of what's very special right here in Ames. And thank you for your work, Jeff and Candace, to help keep our planet diverse.
Most definitely.
Thank you for having us.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host, Jim Werbel, and Mary Rankin's been our co-host. Today we had Christina Murphy from the Ames Water Department discuss the importance of fog in your plumbing and your holiday cooking. And we had Candace Gardner and Jeff Carstens from the North Central Regional Plant Introduction Station discussing efforts to save the ash tree seed stock. And it was really amazing.
And Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of their past Local Talk shows online at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you'll also find information about all the many wonderful diverse guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org. You can also like KHOIFM on Facebook and get updates on all the show's postings in your local news feed.
Local Talk was engineered today by Jonah DeGeest. I'm always glad to have Jonah in the studio with me. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team as reporter, contact us at 292-2878. Oh, that's the same number that you call for the pledge drive. That's 292-2878. So call, please, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Oh, you can also send money through our website at khoifm.org. So please use all those sources to pledge and join us. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends, tell them to become a member by pledging at 292-2878. And remember, your participation as a listener and your general contributions are what make KHOI sustainable. Thanks for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio.